The Palais Garnier was 3 days away from dress rehearsals. Magnificent and vast, built of gold and marble atop a dead arm of the River Seine, the theater was the most celebrated and reviled building in all of France before its first stone was even laid. To the pious folk of the countryside, it was a symbol of the opulence and sin that had plunged France into years of war and civil strife, surely a punishment from God for the decadence of Paris during the Second Empire. To the rich and fashionable of Paris, it was also a symbol of opulence and sin, which, as every aspiring sophisticate knows, are the crucial ingredients of a good time. No one asked what the poor of Paris thought. They had caused rather enough trouble over the last decade, after all. While the ornate marble rooms and plush red velvet seats stood empty, backstage was a hive of activity. The smell of fresh paint and turpentine, mingled with the sounds of workers pounding away with hammers and the string section warming up for rehearsal. Young girls, the petits rats pulled from the hills of Montmartre to be background dancers, ran through the halls laughing, the excitement of an upcoming performance suffusing their thin faces with pleasure. Opera singers ran through their scales, seamstresses hemmed costumes until their hands ached and their fingers were red. Even the horses in the underground stables stomped their hooves in excitement. Amidst all the noise and joy and life, Amélie St. James, Étoile, prima ballerina of the Paris Opera Ballet, sat still and silent, thinking about how hungry she was and how much her hip ached. "Just one more pose," the photographer said, his assistant hurriedly moving the equipment. "Hold the bouquet like that. Yes, stay perfectly still." Click, flash. Amélie blinked the stars from her eyes as the photographer nodded in satisfaction. "Now, Mademoiselle St. James has time to answer a few more questions," the director of the opera ballet said to the dozen or so journalists gathered in the small room. He had chosen the Salon de la Lune for the meeting with the press, just one of the many jewel-like magnificences of the Palais Garnier. Dark, ominous birds and bats soared across the ceiling, surrounded by sharp rays of silver paint and glowing golden constellations. Platinum leaf lent the room a feeling of being surrounded by actual moonlight, the mirrors lining the walls magnifying the effect. Amélie caught her reflection through the dark-suited men. She looked too pale. The hours of sitting and answering questions had taken a toll. "Mademoiselle St. James," one of the reporters began, "you'll be dancing the title role in the upcoming revival of Giselle, but your piety is well known. Giselle, of course, disobeys her mother and falls in love with a man far above her station. What would you say to young, impressionable girls who might find Giselle's decisions romantic?" "Considering she goes mad and dies before the second act, I'd suggest they avoid princes, in disguise or otherwise." Amélie's slow smile had its own reviews. Saint Amie's melancholic, graceful expression of goodwill elevates all who are privileged to see it, and she deployed it now. "I consider Giselle to be very proper viewing for young women," she said. "Giselle makes a grave mistake and pays an enormous price for it." Again, madness and death. "But it is ultimately a story of redemption, sacrifice, and the purity of love. Given the chance to take revenge on the lover who betrayed her, she protects him instead. She puts his needs before her own, and in that way, I believe, attains salvation." The journalists diligently dashed her answer down in their notebooks. The director nodded, pleased with her performance. Saint Amie, the people of Paris called her. Beloved, pious, and kind.